Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We call it Baltimore Positive, Positively Weekend here, and it's positively summer. I'm excited about that. I've been down to Merriweather this week already. Our friends at the Maryland Lottery have me out at Sorrento of Arbutus here this week while the Orioles are on the West Coast. Next Wednesday, we will be concluding our West Coast run, Anaheim on Wednesday. We'll be up at Greenmount Station on Wednesday. And Hampstead, one of my favorite crab cakes, one of my favorite people, and Chris and Dave and the Greenmount Bowl, and always love getting up to Carroll County. It's all brought to you by our friends at GVMC and Farnan and Dermer, and some new sponsors that are coming this summer as well. Luke Jones joins us now after wiping the sleep out of his eyes on a late Tuesday night. I was at the Black Crowes concert, which ended right around the time the baseball game began, quite frankly. I'm in the middle of writing a Gunnar Henderson thing. My former boss, Jack Gibbons, really the guy who is the reason I'm involved in this industry at all from 1986, who gave me a break in life. He writes for Baltimore Baseball and Connolly and Schmuck and those guys. And he wrote a Gunnar Henderson column. And I thought, man, I'm an old guy now. I'm reading my boss's column, who loved baseball. Jack's a baseball nut. And he wrote about Gunnar Henderson. And I thought, no offense to Jack, but like I gotta write about Gunnar Henderson because, and so I started to. It's not a Gunnar Henderson problem, although it is. But they don't hit the ball, dude. Like here we go again. This is third year. You and I mean, we go back to that. You always talk about that Yankee series 2 years ago in May of 24. Beginning then, I think when this thing really started to fall apart, we started to talk about them not hitting the ball consistently, striking out too much, leaving runners, and like all the situational hitting things we talk about, which is their hitting efficiency isn't very good. And then there's this nights where they don't get base runners.
Yeah, I mean, what do you want me to say in a game where they had two base runners after the first inning? I mean, it's that
You're saying you should
simple.
have gone to bed at 10 o'clock and not stayed up so late,
You
Luke.
know what I will say? It's funny you mentioned how it's not as bad as it used to be with the West Coast, right? Because so many of these teams have, rather than like once upon a time, you had the 10:35 starts and,
The
some
11:05
even
starts.
11:05. I mean,
Yes.
you have to go way back for that, but. But even like the 10:35, the 10:05 starts, those are fewer and that's few and far between compared to 9:40, 9:45. It's not awful. I mean, the game was over at midnight. It's kind of what happens when it's 3-1, right? And there's
I
not a
remember
whole lot of
midnight used to
offense,
be the
but
third inning, dude.
exactly. So it was just funny when you were mentioning that. I mean, like that part of it wasn't so bad, but I mean,
I remember when I used to go out at midnight.
yeah, right. No,
Was a
that.
while ago.
Absolutely. It's one of those
It's
funniest things.
11:30. Let's go to Fells Point. No,
Right,
I
when
don't
you're a
think.
young person, like 10 o'clock was when, oh, I got to start getting ready. And
Right.
now it's like, should I go to bed now or watch one binge
Now
one
I'm at a
more
Black
show?
Crowes concert. I'm the only person there that's not silver, and I'm seeing people yawn before they even take the
Yeah.
stage at 9:15.
They're
Yeah.
serving coffee at a concert, right? Yeah.
Well, it's
But
funny
no,
how
I mean,
sports has gotten earlier to get it over with earlier, right? Like 11 o'clock used to be bedtime, right? Like Jerry Turner, you know where your children are, like
right.
all of that, right? Now, baseball's got to be over by 9:15, or it's gone too late. We can't get home till 10 o'clock. So, baseball has moved back tremendously earlier, given the sport itself over the course of time. But I guess the West Coast part of that it bends into the fact that it did get over at midnight. I guess your advice is you can make it to the end of some of these games where maybe you couldn't before.
Yeah, but at the same time, the home team needs to give you something to write to want to stay up and watch it,
Sure.
right? And that wasn't the case on Tuesday night. Now, Brandon Young was good. I mean, I can't have don't have too many things to say about Brandon Young that I'm disappointed or anything like that. I mean,
Well, the
okay.
bullpen was problematic.
Yeah, I mean, really for me, I mean, obviously the offense was the major problem. I mean, like you don't even have to have watched the game to see that. I mean, you had three hits, right? You didn't have you went from the second inning through into the seventh without a base runner. I mean, like nothing else needs to be said. I mean, Logan Gilbert was really good. Like I thought he had good stuff. I mean, really, really good fastball. He gets good extension on his pitches, I think. But that said, I mean, they just didn't hit the ball whatsoever. But for me, I really look at Grant Wolfram in the situation, second and third, one out. You got JP Crawford up. He gets the head 1-2. I mean, that right there is a spot. Cal Raleigh on deck. That's a spot right there. You need a strikeout. And he missed on the 1-2 pitch. And then the 2-2 and the 3-2, I mean, the pitches weren't even close. So then you walk him, you load the bases, put you in a different position against Cal Raleigh. And it was an 0-1 two-seamer. It was a little up in the zone. Like, wasn't the worst pitch ever, but that sequence was just like right there. That's an example of what I talk about, that you need more high leverage. And specifically, they need a high impact left-handed reliever for a spot like that. And, he just didn't get the job done. But again, this is also the problem when you get into one of these pitching duel type games where runs are at a premium. You look at Seattle, they have a bullpen ERA that's about a run better than the Orioles right now. Now, Ryan Helsley's back. That's good. They need to have a lead in the ninth inning for that to matter as much,
Well, they
obviously,
didn't take the
but
bullpen as seriously in the offseason as they
no.
did even getting starting pitching, right? Like in regard to Eflin, in regard to spending money on Bassett, the pursuit of all of that, the pursuit of the bullpen wasn't the biggest thing in the offseason for them once they signed Kittredge and Helsley. And Helsley, and look, that's a big expense, right? After they
Sure.
got rid of Sir Anthony and, that whole group that they brought in from the Phillies and the signings of various closers in the last couple of years. But the left-handed part of that, I don't know that we've talked about that a whole lot. Once the former cast went away, we were like, oh, it's just next man up. I guess that's going to be Enns. I guess that's going to be Wolf. You knew there was going to come a point in June in the bullpen where you're going to have a left-hander that we've not heard of or somebody that's not desired that's going to get brought into a game. But to your point, in a game when you only get three hits, two hits, seventh, you need hit by pitches to get base runners.
Yeah.
Like I hear you. And at that point, the bullpen was something we talked a lot about. And Tuesday night was one of the nights it got spit up a little bit, right?
Yeah, I mean, just a little. I mean, again, it wasn't a full-blown meltdown. At some point, you were going to have to score another run. Like, either side was going to have to score another run. It was 1-1 in the bottom of the seventh inning, right? And Seattle was able to do
Winnable
it, and the
game.
Orioles
Winnable
weren't.
game is a
Yeah,
good call,
sure.
right?
But it also comes back to what we've been talking about here, as this team had its 10-4 stretch, and since then they've lost four in a row, they've won three in a row, they've now lost three in a row again. I mean, it's something different every night that you and I can pick apart, right? I mean, every morning when we're breaking down the previous night's game or the previous day's game, it can be the hitting, it can be the defense, it can be the pitching, it can be the starting pitching, it could be a base running issue, it could be the bullpen, right? It's just it. We keep waiting for this team to find its footing and play consistently better baseball. They did that for about 2.5 weeks,
Well, I'm not expecting
and
that to
now,
happen at Dodger Stadium this weekend, just so you know.
sure,
You know what I mean?
and that's where you kind of go back to. You look at this 3-city, 9-game road trip, and okay, Anaheim certainly isn't a daunting place, but it's the final leg of this road trip. But you have Seattle, who, as we've said, I mean, the Mariners aren't this great baseball team, but they're better than the Orioles, and you're on the road, and it is sleepy. And I think for me, what was kind of
Well, it wasn't
disappointing,
sleepy when everybody took their shirts off, started going crazy. I mean,
well,
like, I was listening on the radio coming up 70, and the World Cup crowd was going crazy, right?
yeah.
The ole, 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 ole.
The tarps off thing is, you and I haven't talked about it too much, but
We haven't talked about it at all. You
it's
want to?
something. I don't think it's anything that's that deep. I think it's just a bunch of young kids and young men and teenagers and 20 somethings are just, hey, take our shirts off. Probably the older ones in that group have had a few adult beverages.
I don't see
But
drunk people at baseball games in a general sense. You know what I
I
mean?
mean,
Like,
you'll find them, you'll find
but
them still, but
I don't know that that's the crowd as much as maybe the Wild Bill era.
but the tarps off. There's a little bit of that
You
going
oh
on,
you okay, all
a
right.
little bit. I mean, not anything like out of control, but I just it is funny some of these games that I'll notice. I'm trying to think which series it was recently. I think it was San Diego. It might have been the Seattle, one of the Seattle games last week, where I looked down the right field line and there were three kids or four kids who had their their shirts off, and then I look up again 5 minutes later and there's 25, and then I look up again 15 minutes later and there's 200 people, and there weren't a lot of people in the crowd overall, but so many of them have congregated there to do that. I mean, it's something fun if it's something that gets young people
It's more
excited about
authentic than the
games.
squirt zone, where I
Sure.
still literally, I am a Baltimore baseball historian. And if anybody asks me how that thing in left center field happened, I just say Greg Bader was running the team and he had a stupid idea. I don't even know where it came. Maybe the team squirting with the
Oh,
sunflower. But like, hey, let's splash everybody in left field, charge $20 and see who comes.
Oh, I didn't
What a
know I
great
had.
idea. And I'm like, okay, I mean, but this is what they're trying to do.
Sure.
Wild Bill was an organic creation.
Right.
Unlike maybe Real Fan Dan, where I don't know what that is. I mean, the team's clearly adopted him and paying him. He's a mascot at this point. He's a paid mascot for the team. But like, the tarps off thing started in St. Louis 3 weeks ago.
Probably
Like,
about a month ago at this
yeah, I
point.
mean, it's not. I can only say this as a Bryan Adams fan. Last year, he toured America, and I'd never seen this before. Dude, I've been to 10,000 concerts. Indulge me. He had a song halfway through, and he always does like a get up and dance kind of song. Like he has a rockabilly soul, Bryan Adams does. He plays a lot of rockabilly, and he has a song in the show, and he encouraged the men. He had a cameraman come out and said, if you take your shirt off, we're going to zoom in. So obviously, I didn't see any women do this, but a lot of men did it. And then I went to South America, and in South America, he was doing it in Montevideo, where, by the way, Donald Trump, Stephen Miller, these racist pieces of garbage, threw the Uruguay team off the bus the other day. Their welcome to America was bomb sniffing dogs, or on the Uruguay team bus. So, but in Uruguay, in all through South America, there were 1,200 men in an arena with their shirts off, like a soccer crowd, you know? So I saw it take off in South America amongst soccer fans. So I guess the in between of all of this, soccer fans would be quick to do that. Guys take their shirts off when they score a goal, especially in Latin culture. So I would think with this World Cup thing being here, that could become a World Cup thing too, of the crossover, when I saw the Seattle crowd that was a World Cup crowd doing World Cup stuff and then taking shirts off, I'm thinking they're here for a month. Maybe it'll turn into a World Cup thing because I saw it at a concert. Now I'm seeing it at baseball games. I have no idea why those frat boys did that in St. Louis. I mean, I don't know what the reasoning of the rat. Hey, let's take our shirts off and swing them. I know Bryan Adams encouraged people to do it at a concert. And I've seen, it is a World Cup. It's certainly a soccer oriented thing, I would say. So as Brazil and Uruguay and Colombia and Argentina sort of take over America here the next couple of weeks, and they start putting people look like me in cages, we'll see whether that part of it takes off even into the soccer thing, because I think it will. That's just a little prediction. I'm throwing that out, because there were soccer guys doing it in Seattle last night.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the fans from those various countries would tell you we do our own things, right? You know what I mean? And I just in a matter of national pride, I'm not sure that's gonna,
Well, that's the songs that are sung.
right? I mean, that's and that's kind of my thing. My very, very rudimentary look and appreciation for it would speak to the chants, the different songs that are sung, all that. I mean, I did see over the weekend what Scotland. I guess a bunch of their fans went to Fenway for the Sunday night game or something like
Oh,
that,
did
and
they? Okay.
it sounded like that was kind of cool.
Well, I have a
But
little World
let me
Cup
hear.
story I haven't told. 1994, when a World Cup was here. The Orioles, I obviously that was a strike summer for baseball, but before the strike, the World Cup was this, it was June of 94. And there were games at RFK Stadium that year. There's three games I think they played down there. Pete Carinci is going to come on at some point and talk to me about it because he went to those games. But and that was sort of lore. Our former morning show host, it was your co-host, he went to games. Part of the lore of the World Cup being here in 94 was a handful of people I knew went to some games, right? Which is the most unique thing ever, other than me going to Germany in 2006. There aren't a lot of people I know that have been to World Cup games, and now it's come here, and still not a lot of people in the world. My buddy Ron Cassie, a senior editor from the Baltimore Magazine, he was in Philly the other night for the Ecuador game. I mean, he put pictures up. He was at the game, and I'm thinking, how much did you pay, dude? That's what I'm going to say to him when I find him. But the World Cup being here, you and I won't talk about that much, but there was a spillover of it. But in 94, Mike Messina and I, and sometimes David Segui, would go out drinking after games at Hooters or at Ball's back in the day, which is now the Ale Street Ale House, Ale Pat Street Ale, whatever it is, for the young people. If I say Ball's to you, do you know what I'm talking about? You don't
Honestly,
remember? You were a kid.
yeah, I don't, I
Really
can't
not.
say I remember
Pratt
that.
Street Ale House was called Balls.
Okay.
It was called Balls in the early part.
Yeah,
The brewer
I'm
now is
familiar
DJ
with the place,
Crickets.
yeah, but yeah.
It's had a lot of names, but nonetheless, it was Balls. So we would always go there and drink after games and watch the West Coast games. Mark Messina was often a part of that too when he got a little older. But we were sitting at Hooters drinking beer after a game. I distinctly remember this. It was Messina and I. It was kind of a quiet night. There was an usher who that was a buddy of ours, an usher from Essex that would come out and drink with us. He was one of Messina's buddies, and we're like sitting outside at Hooters on the outside deck, beautiful summer night, June night, and we heard a roar. We heard like a rumble, like a group of people at midnight on a friggin' Wednesday night. I mean, like there was nobody downtown. And this is, I don't want to hear the bang bang Fox 45 crowd, like, were you afraid of getting shot? No, I lived downtown for 20 years. We're not going that lane. But it was really a quiet night. The Oriole crowd had gone. All 46,000 of them went home that night because there were that many people down there then.
Right.
And this throng of people came. It sounded like Vikings. And they were coming down the promenade from the other pavilion, coming from the north side down south. They were coming to Hooters at midnight, and they were 150 people. They were all dudes, mostly dudes. They were all dressed in blue, and some of them had their shirts off and stuff like that. They were Norwegian, and they had Norwegian flags painted all over them, and they had Norwegian everything. And they were yelling Norway. They were drunk. They were doing the next day, I think, or the day before, Norway was playing in DC and they stationed in Baltimore. And the Norwegian fans all stayed in Baltimore and they all came down and they had no idea who Mike Messina was, which he loved. So we sat there and talked. They took over the bar. They came in and there were five servers there and there's 200 people and beer! And they were all like screaming their songs. They took over the bar. They were chanting. There was nobody there but them, 12 Oriole fans, me and Messina. But the World Cup's awesome like that. You know, like I caught myself in the middle of it 20, 32 years ago, 20, 32 years ago. You were 9? God, my God. 10, something like that. But it's a once in a lifetime thing. So it took over an Oriole game in the middle. I thought that was kind of the neatest thing because it reminded me of the night the Norwegian people came.
I mean, and first of all, this conversation is reflecting that there was very little to talk about with an Orioles game,
Well, I'll
or
let you talk about the Orioles all you
no,
want.
but I, but
We do
just to
that every
finish,
day.
just to fin no, I was just poking some fun, but I think it's interesting for me. I was 10 going on 11, right? I mean, I turned 11 in October of
Did
94.
you even know it was happening?
Yeah, I knew it was happening,
Okay.
and this really lends itself to what I was just about to say. And I say this as someone who's, I'm not going to sit here and lie and say that I'm a big soccer fan. I'm not. You know I'm not. But I will say I do have more of an appreciation for it and what it means globally. And I think in 1994, even as a 10-year-old who read the sports page every day, so it's not like I wasn't aware of it. I watched it. I mean, I remember what Alexi Lalas and Colby Jones and some of the guys that were on that team. Very little. But I at least have some snapshot memories of it. I've
Say
watched.
John Harkes and you'll sound really smart.
There we go.
Okay.
But I think,
Ab Ramos.
I guess I'm saying from my perspective, that event as a 10-year-old growing up in the greater Baltimore area, Baltimore and then southern tip of Pennsylvania, Mason-Dixon line, that felt like so much of a novelty. And now it's wow, like I at least have a greater appreciation for how much this means to the entire world, right? In the same way that I have very little interest in the Olympics, right? The Winter Olympics, I watched the women and the men's hockey, right? And only the last couple rounds because the US, won
And you
gold
don't
in
even
both
like
of
hockey, right? But
them.
that doesn't, I'm not, it's not lost to me that what the Olympics and what these global events mean. So for the World Cup, I don't have extremely high hopes for the United States making a particularly deep run, although first match, very impressive. But I think you see how far the sport on that stage, not talking about just kids playing soccer in their local community, right? Rec league and all that, which has gone on for decades. But I think in the 30 plus years, 32 years since that World Cup, you do get a sense of how much bigger it actually is in the United States than it was at that point in time. Is it ready to, is soccer going to surpass the NFL in this country? No, of course Dude,
not.
I was on the radio
But
that whole summer in 94, and I took phone calls, and the Orioles were playing, and baseball strike was real, and we didn't have a football team. We were never getting a football team ever. That was a year we were losing expansion teams, right? So we'd already lost the expansion draft at that point. So I would say to you that having done this professionally, I would say the country didn't even notice it in 94 when it was here.
I mean,
And like, and that comes from a guy whose sports life put me on the radio at 26 years of age at that time, that like it wasn't noticed at all by anybody. And I guess just watching the Oriole game on Tuesday night, it screamed there's a soccer tournament going on in
I mean,
America, right?
there's no doubt
And
about
there's
that.
no denying it this time around, I don't think. And maybe that speaks to me being closer to 60 than 20 and not
And
being young and dumb and having just been in Uruguay, having just been in Colombia, having just been in Argentina, like seeing the passion for these for the lead up for the World Cup in Argentina. I was in Argentina one day. I was in Buenos Aires one day, and everything I saw was World Cup oriented. And when I traveled last week to Las Vegas and LA, LA is a World Cup city. Philadelphia is a World Cup city. And when I was in Philadelphia briefly last week, in the train station I was in and the airport, they are completely World Cupped up. Like if you go to Philadelphia right now and do anything, you'll see kiosks in the middle of nowhere with World Cup whoopies in them that you slide your card and you get a World Cup trinket. I mean, shit's gonna be 5 cents 6 weeks from now. They're gonna have to ship it off to Africa, so I don't know. I mean, like there's all I saw kiosks with junk. Literally, they were merchandise swag. Get a keychain for $14 that has a World Cup logo, like junk in machines, and that's everywhere. So I think the World Cup logo, if you move around the country at all this month, you're just going to see it. Now, whether you're subjected to the games or not, I'll let you in a little secret, Luke. You don't be mad at me, and Karinji's going to be really upset. But because I just didn't want to do 12 hours a day for a month. I didn't get caught up in it this time. It's the first time in my lifetime I've not watched it.
Fair enough. And
First
I'll
time since
say,
94, I haven't sat. And in 98, I stopped my life. In 02, we hosted parties and they were great. In 06, I stopped my life for 14 days and lived in Amsterdam and went to games in Germany. So I love me some World Cup. I love me some soccer. I planned on going to Africa in 10. I didn't go. 14, my wife almost died in the middle of the tournament. We watched Germany play. Qatar. I mean, right around then, I started to see how sleazy it is. The Russia Qatar angle on the Olympics and what these sleaze bags that are currently these criminals that are running our country have inherited with this World Cup. And I don't know. People are going to go back with a bad taste in their mouth about America a month from now. Whoever they are, they are. This is not a great place to be right now. And the World Cup being in the middle of it, of the political storm, and what's happening to the Iraqi team, the Iranian team, what's happening to 25 countries that Stephen Miller's too racist to let people in. So that's on top of all of this that we're watching it. And I'd love for the baseball team to be more relevant. So, like in 1994, where I didn't have to think about the soccer tournament because the baseball team was, I thought at the time, relevant. We're getting to the point with this West Coast thing. We've just spent 15 minutes talking about soccer because a bunch of guys took their shirts off. Because quite frankly, when we'll bring it back to the team, and I was talking about Gunnar Henderson in writing, but like Team's falling down the mountain, and I don't know how many people are going to be up at midnight next Monday night watching them play from Anaheim.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. Just a couple things, because
Because you
I
love you some soccer, I know.
oh, I was just gonna say I've been watching some of it
Have
now.
you?
I'm a
I just the
novice.
corruption part of it. I'm
I
really
am
I love the
well.
game. I just cannot get past the dirtiness of it and charging $4,000 for tickets, these creeps, and saying that they're giving it back to fans and
Yeah, I mean.
kissing Schindler's ass and he's the peace leader. I mean, God, it's as gross to me as Chad Steele and Greg Bader running the Orioles in the Rays. Like, it's just dirty. It's not what it's supposed to be. So the World Cup to me is makes me want to throw up. And it's here, and I wish I wanted to go, and I wish I could afford to go, and I wish I had again, I just spoke it with love of the game. I was the first guy that loved it around here, the only guy that loved it around here, according to Pete Carinci. 30 years into it, it makes me itch. Whenever I see the FIFA logo, it makes me itch. They're mafia criminals. I mean, they really are.
Well, and look, I'm not gonna. First of all, you're well way more versed in that than I am. But at the same time, I'm also not going to begrudge anyone for enjoying it.
Oh, I agree.
I saw
Watch
Cape
it.
Verde draw
Spain.
with Spain, which was, I don't know a whole lot about soccer. I know enough to know that that was crazy,
Was
right? I mean,
Chaminade.
because I think
Yeah.
Spain's what ranked second in the world and all of that. I mean, that was crazy. I saw, I guess what the. Brazil was playing at MetLife. Well, although it's called what? New York, New Jersey Stadium. That's one thing that's kind of funny to me. They have to strip their corporate names of these stadiums, which is actually that's something
Because
that's
the
actually
mafia
kind of
didn't get
refreshing.
its points.
I know. But I saw Brazil come out and they came out to the Alan Parsons Project, the old Chicago Bulls introduction music, right?
Serious.
Sirius. So like I see things like that, I'm just like, this is pretty cool. And it's not deep. Believe
And
me,
it
for
is once in a
yeah,
lifetime.
right,
Like, you know what I
exactly.
mean?
It's
Like, it might come back here in 25 years if we don't get scammed out of it by, I don't know, Qatar or Saudi Arabia or wherever
right,
else they would want to play it. But I mean, the
but
thing
like I
in
said,
Qatar a couple years ago, it was a
sure.
disgrace. I mean, it just would it's just it's a disgraceful group of people putting this tournament on. I can't get that out of my
I'm
mind.
not going to
And I
argue
don't
with
talk
you.
about it every minute of
Yeah.
every day. I talked about it the day they raided them in Switzerland 10 years ago, and the fat guy with the parrot that was stealing millions of money living in Trump Tower, literally living in Trump Tower long before Trump was known to be what Trump is. But this is 20 years ago. The dirtiness of the US committee in trying to get these games and trying to out blood money Qatar and Russia. I mean, it's gross anyway. But
Yeah.
Sirius gets played and people come and the guys run around in their shorts and they dive and it's a good time. Yeah.
And you see the crowds and you see people coming from all around, or people that are from that country originally and living here. I mean, like there are elements to it, despite everything you mentioned, that is reality, but there are also elements to it that are really cool.
There were
And
65,000 people from Ecuador piled into Philadelphia Stadium last week, so.
yeah, I mean, like that's wild, right? I mean, it's awesome. So, I mean, it's you t for me, I'm kind of taking it for what it is. And again, I just kind of drop in if I have an extra hour, I put it on. I'm probably doing some other things and
If
it's on in the
it's like
background, but
potato chips. If I start to watch it,
see, I don't have that problem.
I won't get anything
But
done. I
yeah.
mean, I'm telling you, I've watched World Cups. I'm not in the mood to watch it. I don't have a rooting interest. I don't think the US can win. I'm a bit of a conscientious objector. You know what I
Fair
mean?
enough.
Like, literally, it's just sort
There's
of
nothing wrong
like
with that.
I don't have to talk about it on the air every day. I'm not hosting viewing parties the way I've done for the last 30 years. And I'm just literally my TV actually has a I have a big piece of paper with something that's like a poster in front of my TV. So I don't have my TV up right now. I just don't want to put soccer on at 10 in the morning and watch it till 10 at night every day this month because
Oh.
I'm not talking about it on the radio and I've got work to do. You know what I mean? Like
And let me be
I got
clear,
a crab
yeah,
cake
and
tour stop. And the Orioles are of much higher concern of me or for me, but I think the Orioles season might be over in a week or two, dude.
I
Like,
mean, it's
and if I'm gonna, we're gonna pull it all back in and wrap this in a bow, this soccer piece that we've wrapped around a Tuesday night in Seattle. I'm not out of things to say about the Orioles, but I might be soon.
well, it's just it feels similar to last year in this sense, Now, obviously, last year they started off way worse, right? They were 16 and 34 through their first 50 games. But right after that, they had a stretch where they won 9 of 11 and they got back to, I think their high water mark, like in early June, was 11 games under. And I think we even said it at the time, unlikely as it might be, if you're going to go on a historic run, this is your jumping off point. And then they just settled into being a middling 500-ish team the rest of the way. And so far, this is kind of feeling like that for this group, right? They went 10-4. You know, they had the 7-3 homestand. They started off winning 2 out of 3 in Boston in their last road trip. And then we saw what happened in Toronto after they won that Friday night game. They lost 4 in a row. They rebounded. They won 3 in a row. Won that opener of the San Diego series over the weekend, where anytime you win a series opener, you're saying, hey, this is a chance to win a series. And they've lost 3 in a row again, right? I mean, it's the same 2 steps forward, 2 steps back, 1 step forward, 2 steps back, 2 steps forward, 2 steps back, right? I mean, it's just not gaining any traction whatsoever. And to the point that we made a little bit earlier in the segment, you can point to something different about this club every night, right? When they falter. Is the hitting better than the other areas of this team? Yeah. Is it without fault or flaw? No, not even close. So the defense is at best below average and at its worst, horrendous. The pitching over the 10-4 stretch, they pitched pretty well. Brandon Young pitched quite well last night. I mean, there was nothing about him that I'm going to sit here and complain about. He didn't strike out a lot of people, but that's kind of this pitching staff in general. The bullpen, Grant Wolfram was disappointing, but it's not as though they gave up 7 runs. I mean, they had 2 base runners after the first inning. One of them was Pete Alonso getting hit, right? I mean, like Adley Rutschman had an infield single at the end of the game,
Well,
right?
and part
I
of it
mean,
is Alonso getting hit, and then the next guy hitting a home run because you got the tying run at
yeah,
the
I mean, you're.
plate or whatever. I mean, they were in the game, and the game got over early, as you pointed out 20 minutes ago. But hitting the ball is problematic for them at this point in any with any consistency. And then we start talking about the star players, right? Then we start to have to talk about Alonso and start to talk about Henderson and talk about the disappointing draft picks and talk about guys given opportunities. Whether it's Blaze Alexander, whoever these guys are, Leody Taveras, guys that when they came to camp back in February or March did not appear to be primary players on this team, and they've assumed that sort of role. Primary
Sure.
players on a sub 500 team.
Yeah. I mean, look, there have been success stories. I mean, Leody Taveras, not so much over the last month, but early on. Blaze Alexander over the last 5, 6 weeks has been terrific. Go look at his numbers over the last 5, 6 weeks. It's why he's playing almost every day at
And if
this
you put
point.
Jordan Westberg in
But
front of his name for those stats, I think you'd live with that, right?
sure. I mean, Blaze Alexander's hitting 297, right? I
Yeah.
mean, he's not hitting for a lot of power. Maybe, Westberg would be hitting for more power, but in terms, it's kind of like what we've talked about with Brandon Young, like in terms of who he replaced in the rotation. And I guess it was Eflin at that point. I mean, you could say Dean Kramer, right? I mean, those two were kind of lumped together, but Brandon Young hasn't been their problem. It's been the other guys in the rotation that you actually had expectations for who have been underwhelming. And that's kind of where you look at the rest of the series
Well, you
now.
got a guy making $19 million that hasn't been
Well,
very good.
I mean, you do, but no one was expecting Bassett to be the ace. I mean, Bradish has a 4.3 ERA. Boz has been better overall over the last month, but he has a 4.06. I mean, Trevor Rogers has been the biggest disappointment easily. Even with, his last start aside, he's been bad, just plain bad. So, and you go back to Gunnar Henderson. I mean, look, it's still a simplistic way of looking at it, but you need your stars to be stars to overcome your deficiencies, right? I mean, Lamar Jackson has been the epitome of that for the Baltimore Ravens over the bulk of the last 7 or 8 years, right? Any imperfection they might have, you have Lamar doing, when he's at his best, doing absolutely absurdly silly things, right? Things that you don't draw up, things that Greg Roman or Todd Monken or Declan Doyle will have drawn up. Lamar does those things when he's right. They haven't gotten that from Gunnar Henderson this year, right? I mean, Gunnar You know, he hits his 100th home run on Friday night and has a three-hit night, and you're hoping that's the start of something. And he's had games like that. He's hit home runs, but the consistency hasn't been there. You know, the silver lining with Gunnar, where I'm hoping maybe kind of sort of this might be where he's starting to come out of it. If you do look at June, he has cut down on the strikeouts overall, big time in the month of June, and he's starting to draw way more walks. I'm hoping that's maybe the start of seeing him not expand the zone as much, make good swing decisions. You know, when he's hitting the ball in the strike zone, they have data for this. When he is swinging in the zone, his numbers are really good. His problem is how much he's expanded the zone, whether you're talking about strikeouts, whether you're talking about not drawing walks, whether you're talking about rolling over, you know, hitting a lazy fly ball to right field, whatever it might be. So, but you need your stars to be stars. It's that simple. And they haven't gotten that from Gunnar Henderson really at all, you know, save for maybe a couple weeks back in April. And, you know, Pete Alonso has certainly been way better since the start of May, but they haven't gotten the best version of Pete Alonso that I think they were really hoping to get so far, right? And then you talk about the injuries, or you talk about underperformance of other guys. I mean, it's just the entire thing. The sum is way less than the parts, right? In terms of what we thought the parts were on paper going into spring training and thinking about this team's potential. And it's
Thinking they
lacking.
were going to
It's
contend
lacking.
and they're
It's
pretending. Yeah, I know what you're
lacking.
saying.
I mean, it just is. And, you know, I don't necessarily think that they're going to completely unravel here and they're going to be 18 games under 500
Boy, they got
in
too
a
many good
couple
players
weeks.
for that, right? I
But
mean, that really would be an indictment of Albernaz and Elias.
I
If
mean,
this team
it'd be an indictment
finishes
of
12 games
everybody.
under 500, which it feels like it's on pace very much to do. This very much feels like 75 and
Oh, I
87.
mean,
Yeah, you know what I mean?
that's
Like
the pace they're playing at right now.
yeah,
Yeah, I
that's what this
mean,
feels like it's going to be. And if
but I
it's
would also,
that, this is just
but it's an indictment of everyone, though. At the same time, yeah, I
well,
think I'm in.
the owner's terrible, and that's probably not going to change. I learned that. I fought with the old man. People ask me if I'm Free the Birds 20th anniversary. I don't care enough. I don't care enough about any of them or the baseball team. I care about downtown, but I mean, everybody should care about downtown, but my fighting with them 20 years ago about trying to make this better, and 20 years later, it's still not better. People wonder why I'm cranky. You know what I mean? Like, I'm cranky because of this malfeasance and incompetence, and watching the Angelos family drive this thing into a ditch and then have these people pick it up and say that they're going to make it a real thing. And 3 years into it, he's not sitting behind home plate anymore, is he? He's not on TV anymore, is he? He's not making bobbleheads anymore, is he? He's not sitting in LeBron. Where the hell is he? He's got married. He's a billionaire. He doesn't care. He didn't care about Baltimore. He didn't care about any of this. So the guy running it feels absentee to me at this point. And he's not going to be an active owner. He's going to have the Whistler trying to get WBAL to say nice things about him. Rob Long say nice things about him on the broadcast. Melanie bring him on once a year. I mean, there's no there, I guess, from a leadership standpoint, that to get in front of this when it goes off the curb this week, maybe, and they come back and it's really over, how they present themselves as an organization. Not on the field, not during the whole thing, the television broadcast that nobody's going to be watching in August if they're 14 games under 500. Just all of it. And I'm concerned about it as we sit here getting up on the All-Star break in the middle of summer when they're playing in the middle of the night, and it's real easy to do what I do with the World Cup, just ignore it and make it go away. And I don't want it to go away. I waited all off season. I thought they were going to win 92 games. I feel really duped. And I haven't felt that way in a long time. I never believed in Angelos. This guy, for 5 minutes, I gave him a chance, these
Yeah.
people. And they're awful. I mean, I don't need to wait anymore on this. It's been 2.5 years. They're awful. And I don't think that's going to get better. I don't think you coach billionaires out of this who think they've done something philanthropic and think they're going to squeeze a bunch of money out of it. And they're embarrassed by it, right? Like, the reason he's not around, he's embarrassed. The stadium's empty.
Well, I mean,
And they haven't made it better. They've made it worse. It's worse. There are less people there than when Angelos owned the team. And it's more disappointing because I can't blame it on Angelos, and it's not Angelo. You know what I mean? Like, I'm looking at it and say, all right, it still sucks. Now, who do we blame?
well, that's where I The one point I'll make, and look, I'm not going to stick up for new ownership, but I don't, they've been here 5 minutes.
Long, a lot longer than 5 minutes now. It's getting up on,
You
it's getting up longer than that. It
can I
is.
talk? Can I talk?
Yeah, okay,
I'm
but
trying to. They trusted Michael Elias to run this thing. He's run this thing. It's gone off the rails over the last couple of years. I mean, there's just no other way to put it. So for me, the last sign, and this is where I'm going to give them the tiniest sliver of the benefit of the doubt is, are you going to be duped and continue to think that he's your guy and then you guys are just going to hide and hope it gets better? Or do you need to do what's necessary? And you've already said this. And look, I'm not going to sit here and say, argue for Mike Elias to keep his job if this is another dud of a season, right? After a 2 year trend, we're coming up on 2 years exactly since that day at Costas Inn where we were talking about that Orioles Yankees game. But I view it through that lens of, can you fix it? Can you do what needs to be done in terms of hiring the right advisor or whatever, and go find a new person to run baseball ops if that's what it's going to come to, which increasingly it's feeling like
well,
that's
I saw
what
what they
needed to
came
be
up with
done.
Katie Griggs, and that was just a
Oh,
industry consortium
and look,
of, and a headhunter, basically.
but just a couple more things. I touched on this briefly, just in my 12 Orioles thoughts at BaltimorePositive.com from the San Diego series loss. Saturday night, the New York Knicks won the NBA championship for the first time in 53 years. Now, James Dolan, and man, you want to talk about an organization and ownership and perception of something. I mean, their relationship with Charles Oakley is still broken in
He
terms of him.
is a true piece of garbage, James Dolan. He's trash, human trash.
I'm not,
Yeah.
this isn't about James Dolan. It's about a franchise that was listless largely and unsuccessful and flat out alienating their fan base, flat out alienating former players to the point where I don't think Charles Oakley is still allowed in the Madison Square Garden.
They had him
All of that,
arrested.
all of that. But they won a championship. And that was 53 years. We're on 43 years now for the Orioles. And I think 3 years ago, not that I had a thought that it definitely was going to happen, but I think you had ideas in your mind that this could be a great opportunity over the next 6, 7, 8 years, whatever, of that, and it might still take some luck and lightning
We'll
in a bottle and
revive
all
this
that.
thing. Let's see what the
Right.
Knicks are the next 3 to 5 years. I'm sure it's going to be great. It's New York. There's a lot of money and a lot of,
But I'm just talking about a championship. Look, I understand what you're saying in terms of the long term
Well,
and
the
like,
aftermath of that didn't help Kansas City or some other
I
places,
understand
right?
that,
Yeah,
but
yeah.
all those Royals fans still will always love that specific team, right? No
Right, right.
matter if they're in last place every year in the AL Central for the next 3 decades. But I look at that, and that idea that I had 3 years ago is feeling faint, fainter and fainter again. And the other thing that I think is at work, and this for me is a big part of the attendance piece, regardless of Katie Griggs and ticket prices and things that they've done in changing Birdland membership plans and all of that, is you flat out sold this multi-year rebuild plan. And again, Mike Elias walked into something that was already severely broken. I will continue to remind that he did not come in here and then just tank and take them. They were already historically terrible in 2018, but they did this multi-year tanking, not trying at the major league level, building it from the ground up, rebuilt, built infrastructure, Dominican Academy, all that. And like many of those things were good and they were necessary. But the overall selling point was short-term pain for the long-term gain of something that's vibrant, something that's sustainable, something that should be a long-term window. Not a promise that you're going to win 100 games every year, but a window of good baseball where if this team, if the stars align in a certain year, might be able to do it. And they should have a really solid chance to do it over the course of several years. For that to have lasted basically 2 calendar years, 2.5 tops, I think that's where you have a lot of fans, whether it's like actively feeling disdain or just feeling such disappointment, that I think that's where you run the danger of a more extreme dip in attendance and a more extreme tuning out of the product because of, it feels like a betrayal in that way. I'm not even getting into business and tickets and all those different issues, but just in terms of what was advertised for what this rebuild was supposed to bring and how little it actually did. And now you look at it where it's really difficult to feel like this thing is remotely going in the right direction at this point. I mean, Samuel Bisaccia, okay, you've got Shane Boz under contract. I mean, like Gunnar Henderson's every day moving closer to free agency. Adley Rutschman even closer to free agency. But even with those guys, they're not winning, right? They're not winning. And I think that's where you just look at this thing and it's, yeah, I don't talk much about attendance. You know that. And I know I'm going to wrap up here. I don't talk very much about attendance. It's not my place to tell people to go to games or not to go to games, right? I don't pay for, I paid for tickets a couple times in the last decade, right? So I don't feel that's my place, but I've really noticed the last couple weeks, the crowds feel a lot lighter than they should be for the time of year. And that to me is very much an indictment of where this product, where this club is. And that's a top to bottom issue that they should be very concerned about.
And that's where I bring Katie Griggs in. He is Luke Jones. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Enjoy the games, whatever the games are. There's plenty of games still being played.